Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the podcast of the Loadseaters for Monday, the 21st of December, 2020. I'm joined by Callum, and we are going to be talking about, well, the new coronavirus tyranny that appears to be upon us. But before we start, you can go to loadseaters.com and see extra content from us, as well as checking out our premium content, which this week is going to include a book club review of The Rule of Law by Lord Tom Bingham. This very influential English judge died, I think, 10 years ago, but still very, very appropriate work. And in fact, we are going to be referencing this, his work and
the... Apparently there's a problem with the audio.
Oh, is there?
No, that's fine.
All right, okay. Referencing this and the legal and constitutional history of England in our arguments against what the government is currently doing to us. So timely and appropriate. So that'll be up this week, but we've also got loads of other content on there. So if you'd like to support us, do sign up and be a premium member. But in the meantime, Christmas has been cancelled. Now, I'm not particularly happy about this, but I guess we're not in Tier 4, so I probably shouldn't complain. But this began about a week ago now with the announcement of a new coronavirus strain that was discovered in the UK. UK scientists named it VUI-2020-12/01. Catchy. It includes a mutation on the viral genome region encoding the spike protein, which in theory could result in COVID-19 spreading more easily between people. The British government said on Monday, last Monday, that this was cited as a cause of a rise in new infections, which it partly linked to the new variant as it moved its capital moved in the capital city and many other areas. There is currently no evidence that the variant is more likely to cause severe COVID-19 infections, scientists said, although it would render vaccines less effective. This is according to Reuters. So the important part here is there's not really any actual evidence of the effect of what this new strain will do. And so it shouldn't be too much of a surprise that there's at least one scientist, Carl Hennigan, the professor of evidence-based medicine at the Oxford University's Nuffield Department of Primary Care, who has expressed skepticism over this. He said, "I've been doing this job for 25 years, and I can tell you can't establish a quantifiable number in such a short time." He added, "Every expert is saying it's too early to draw such an inference." And he also said that there was no doubt at this time of year, the height of viral season, that it was a difficult time for the NHS, but he said that the failure to put it out on the basis of the figures was undermining public trust. We'll talk about the NHS later, because frankly, it's hard to see how the NHS is in any particular danger at the moment. But anyway, so this strain seems to have been known about since October. If we go to the Twitter link here, this is data that the BBC were citing in their article about it. And as you can see, the orange bar there is the new strain, which I can't remember the number for.
Just call it COVID-20.
Like, yeah,
surely
I guess,
that's more catchy.
I guess you could. But the new strain, as you can see, it begins being registered in the beginning of October and then continues on until you can see it's displacing the existing strains, it seems, rather than massively spiking. Although there is an increase in the number, as you can see. So it's not that it's having sort of no effect, and it's not that these things aren't being more widely spread or anything like that. There is something going on here. But it looks like majority-wise, it's actually just replaced the older strains.
So I'm assuming this is the argument for why they're saying it's more infectious. I saw one person saying that the R number they're estimating is larger by 0.4 to 0.9. Why margin of error?
That was what Boris gave in his speech, but we'll get to that.
But the point is that because it's replacing it, I'm assuming that's how they're making the conclusion that it's more infectious.
No, it seems to just be the fact that there's a heightened number of cases from, as you can see, around sort of 12,000 for the past few months. 12 to up to 18.
Yeah, but with that level of replacement, you'd expect it to be...
Yeah. There's an increase in coronavirus cases, and as you can see, a massive increase in this particular strain, and so they think that this is more infectious, but this just hasn't been proven yet. It's just being assumed, which is why you have a scientist saying, well, we don't really have the evidence to confirm that. But if we go to the government data, we can see that this is, you know, there is a rise in cases. This is just the number of cases itself, as you can see, leading up to the November the 5th lockdown, I think it was. It was spiking at something like 25,000. And then we've gone back up after that lockdown to about 23,000. So there is an increase in the number of cases. The number of deaths is not an exponential increase, though, if you can look at it. It's actually kind of tailing off. It's been going down over this period of time. So it's not rising in line with the number of cases. So it could be that they're just discovering cases of people who are effectively carrying like herd immunity that are just being tested positive. I don't know.
I don't know if you have the graph of the infections, the little upkick we're getting recently.
Mm-hmm. That was
the last one. You'd have to wait, I think it's 2 weeks until you get the upkick in deaths.
Right, okay.
So we would have to wait. Okay, but the trend line, as you say, is what it is.
But it's nowhere near the peak as it was back in March and April.
Absolutely,
nowhere near that. It's half that, if that. And so it's not something that I think is outside of the capacity of the NHS to deal with. But we'll get into the NHS figures shortly. But one thing I think is important to note that COVID has actually become a leading cause of death now, or at least the way that the data is framed. It's deaths within 28 days of a positive COVID-19 test. So you don't know that that's actually directly from, but it's difficult to get together. But as the Office of National Statistics tell us, in November 2020, there were 47,910 deaths registered in England, which is 6,241 more than the five-year average for November. And in Wales, there were 3,000 more and 3,000 more deaths registered with 576 being more than the five-year average for November. Coronavirus was the leading cause of death in England for November 2020, which is the first time that this has happened since May 2020, because obviously as the months go on, coronavirus in the rankings of like the top 30 things that the cause of death, I mean, it dipped down to like number 24 at one point, so it wasn't even top 10, and this was through the summer. But as we've come into the winter, the number of deaths that are being attributed to it have been rising.
Because like road accidents, for example, will be fairly constant, whereas COVID comes in waves. If we can scroll down, I think that's a graph demonstrating the fact that it's so different, or is that a different thing? Yeah, keep going. There's a graph showing, so you can see that.
I mean, here we go. This is a good thing. So you can see that it's rising back up again, but it had sunk down throughout the summer. But that's expected. That's the same with flu seasons in summer. I guess it's people being outside, getting a lot of vitamin D and being healthy and active and stuff like this. There's probably lots of lifestyle modifications that people engage in the summer. They don't necessarily engage in the winter. Who knows? But it is going back up. So So it's not being fabricated by the government or anything like that. There is something happening. And so it shouldn't be any surprise that the Labour Party, in response to this thing that is happening, demanding the worst possible solution that can be implemented. Keir Starmer on 15th of December came out and just said, look, I will support the Prime Minister in locking down everything if he locks down everything. From Labour's own press release, right, on this, Labour leader Keir Starmer called on the Prime Minister to convene an emergency COBRA meeting to review the current relaxation of restrictions over Christmas following the sharp rise in coronavirus cases, which is the rise we just covered. It is more than it was, but it's not like panic stations. It's not, way higher than it has been previously. The Labour leader has pledged to support the government if it concludes that tougher restrictions will be needed to save lives, protect the NHS and secure the economy from another national lockdown. Quote, it is my view that you should now convene COBRA within the next 24 hours to review whether the current relaxation is appropriate given the number of rising cases. The tiered system has not kept the virus under control and left us with precious little headroom. Put simply, if you take the wrong decision now, the ramifications for our NHS and our economy in the new year could be severe. So it's not even about people dying now, it's about saving the NHS. But this was on December the 15th. So Keir Starmer is calling for heavy restrictions, and only in the case of heavy restrictions will he support the UK government. And Boris's response to this, if we can play the clip, in fact, was great, frankly.
We don't want to, as I say, to ban Christmas, to cancel it. And I think that would be, frankly, inhuman and against the instincts of many people in this country.
Well, he's right. It would be inhuman to ban Christmas, and it would be against the instincts of many people in this country. He, in fact, was in Parliament shortly afterwards mocking Keir Starmer for wanting to cancel Christmas. I was going to say, can we play that clip? But I guess we can't, since there's a problem. So he was in Parliament, and he literally said, we don't want to criminalise people's long-made plans. So you would have thought, at least a few days ago, from Boris's rhetoric, that this was very much, we're not going to be cancelling Christmas, despite the demands of Chancellor Starmer, we're not going to be locking people in their homes over Christmas. Oh, yeah, okay, let's go for it.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I wish he'd have the guts just to say what he really wants to do, which is to cancel the plans people have made and cancel Christmas. I think that's what he's driving at, Mr. Speaker. He's looking a bit blank. I think that's what he's driving at. But I can tell him that as of today, and just this morning, there is actually, as I say, unanimous agreement across all the UK government, across all the devolved administrations, including members of all parties, Mr. Speaker, including his own, that we should proceed in principle with the existing regulations, Mr. Speaker, because we don't want to criminalise people's long-made plans.
So, Keir Starmer, you want to cancel Christmas, and Keir's like, well, I mean, no. Actually, he does want to cancel Christmas. Boris is firmly against this, and yet, on, what was it, Sunday was announced? When was it announced?
I think it was yesterday, actually.
Yeah, it was Sunday, yeah. So on Sunday, it was announced that actually, yes, Boris Cromwell is going to cancel Christmas. He came out and gave this speech that we don't need to play any clips from it because basically we've covered everything that he said. But essentially, it's from Keir Starmer's lips to Boris's ears. You know, Labour's inhuman acts have now become the order of the day. This is exactly what Boris was railing against in a fine manner. You know, we're not going to ruin everyone's holiday because stuff sucks. You know, we're made of sterner stuff. We being British, we should have a stiff upper lip about this. We should, you know, make sensible decisions. But instead, Boris just goes on and links the new virus with the spread, which we said, it hasn't been proven. And Boris accepts all of Labour's framing on this, that science is the only metric by which to judge any of these results. It's like, okay, well, then it's no surprise that he just essentially prostrates himself before the holy R number. The R number has gone up by X amount, and therefore this is essentially kind of like interpreting scripture as the word of God and the scientists being the priests. Because what was this all about? This was all about like reducing the curve, making sure the NHS is fine. And we're going to get to that because the NHS appears to be fine. In fact, it appears to have been scaled back somewhat during the coronavirus pandemic. And so really, this doesn't seem to be much about like actual reality. It seems to now be about policy and implementing forms of social control. But this, just for anyone who doesn't know, we'll give a quick, just stop giving me confused looks. I'm about to explain it.
Oh, confused looks about the R number.
Well,
it's a pretty standard part of virology. That's why I'm a bit...
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But my life isn't a pretty standard part of virology. And I don't give a damn about what a pretty standard part of virology is. You know, I'm thinking about my goddamn rights here, okay? I don't... Like, oh, by the way, we've got this R number from virology. Do you want to just shut down all society because of it?
I'm not saying because number go up, do thing.
But that's literally how Boris frames it.
That R number is not something to be highly suspect. It is.
I'm not saying that it's you know, not a metric or anything. What I'm saying is it doesn't really contain any useful meaning or value.
It's just a piece of data. Exactly. What you do with that data is up to you.
And so Boris saying, well, we've got to worry about the R number, chaps. Like, no, I don't worry about the R number at all in my daily life, in everyone's daily life. No one cares about the R number apart from a very, very narrow band of people who deal with this in their profession. Outside of that, it's just not relevant. You know, I'm sorry that there's an R number that you're concerned about, but I don't see why my business should be ruined or your business should be ruined, or all of the high street businesses should be ruined because a bunch of scientists are concerned about an R number. You know, things happen. Stuff sucks. Life is rough, and we've got to accept that. But anyway, I want to get onto the Cromwellian purge of Christmas, right? So this could go on, and this has gone on. We have precedent for the banning of Christmas. It wasn't just Cromwell, because in the 17th century, England was swept by a Puritan movement that was very anti-monarchical. And in the words of the Puritans, Christmas was a wasteful festival that threatened Christian beliefs and encouraged immoral activities to the great dishonor of God, or in this case, the great dishonor of the R number. The discontent felt within the Puritan community towards festivals led to the enactment of forceful legislation even before Cromwell's protectorate. In January 1645, Parliament produced a new directory for public worship that made it clear that festival days, including Christmas, were not to be celebrated but to be spent in respectful contemplation. I'm waiting for Keir Starmer to tell us that we should probably be engaging in some respectful contemplation.
Should be considering Black Lives Matter's movement and how it affects our lives.
I suspect we should. Yeah. This was to prevent giving liberty to carnal and sensual delights, such as going to the pub and getting drunk and maybe fornicating with someone you don't live with, which currently is illegal in the United Kingdom. You can't have sex with someone you don't live share a household with. So, you know, I'm just saying, the Puritans would actually be like, right, so pubs closed, no fornication, you know, peaceful, respectful contemplation about whatever God is at home. We're getting quite close.
What was their stance on open borders? Did they have one?
Well, they probably weren't in favour of them.
Because this is something Paul Joseph Watson keeps pointing out, which, you know, pub closed, borders open.
Yeah. Although we'll get to why actually the new strain of coronavirus has solved that problem for us in a bit. But anyway, so the point was, from 1647 to 1660, 17 straight years, Christmas was cancelled in England. So don't think this is just this year, because it could well be more. And the thing is, as we know, people are going to go along with this for over a decade until this eventually gets repealed. So don't think this is ridiculous. This will just be the one time. This has never happened before. No, there's nothing new under the sun. This had happened before, and it can last for years. And the thing that really annoys me is watching the even more puritanical Labour lunatics demanding a more stringent position on this. You've got like MPs like Richard Burgon, who are very radical left MPs. Look at the list of countries he's saying are doing a great job. It's like, really? The UK, China, Australia, South Korea, Thailand, Vietnam, and New Zealand, right? So, like, UK, 67,000 deaths. Maybe, you know, depending on how it's measured and, you know, but deaths within 28 days of a COVID test, fine. China, 4,700. Yeah, right. We're just going to take China's numbers, are we? And then it's like, oh, well, what about Australia and New Zealand? It's like, well, what about Australia and New Zealand? What about them? Have we seen any, I don't know, what we could call it, tyrannical lockdowns going on? Any kind of tyrannical police enforcement going on? Any kind of aggression from the police against citizens who are trying to resist this? You know, I don't think that Australia and New Zealand's, like, actions have been laudable throughout the coronavirus pandemic. And yet, he's like, all other countries have a zero COVID plan. We should too. What does a zero COVID plan look like to this radical left-winger? Tyranny. Outright tyranny, and I can't stand it.
Just the absurdity of tweeting unironic communist propaganda from China. Be like, yeah, this is the real figure.
Yeah,
just what world are you living
Richard,
in?
Richard, there's no way that's the real figure. There's no, you cannot trust any of the numbers that the CCP give you, and that is just a rule that you can apply to every aspect of life.
I bet he's paid by them as well. I'm just gonna say it.
Well, I mean, this is Callum's opinion that I disavow. Well, no, we've got no proof that he's been paid. And to be honest with you...
To be honest, he makes more radical accusations. I don't know if you've seen him previously. He got in trouble for shouting that the Zionists were the problem and the world will be better when we get rid of the Zionists. And it's just like, okay, Richard, like, how are you an MP again?
Yeah, and the thing is, right, I don't think he's being paid by China because he is...
No, he probably does it for free.
Well, yeah, he does it for free because, I mean, if you were China, would you pay him? If you were like, right, we've got two stacks of cash, who are we going to give it to? Richard Burgon is not high on that list. He is an unbelievable midwit and clearly doesn't really understand any of the things he talks about. And so it's like, you wouldn't pay him. He's a liability even for the Labour Party. So China's not going to start investing in him, right? They'll pay Keir Starmer, sure. They're not going to pay him. But not that I'm saying Keir Starmer's being paid by China, obviously. But anyway, the thing that's really annoying about this, that really grinds my gears, as it were, is when the Labour Party tweet out something like this, right? The UK will be hit harder than other major economies this year. The Conservatives have let Britain down. You asked for this. In fact, you demanded it constantly, day after day, almost every Labour talking head. We need lockdowns. Tiering isn't working. We need lockdowns. And it's like, oh, you've damaged the economy. What would you have done in their position? You would have damaged the economy too. You want the lockdowns. Like, what's your objection to anything that they've done? They've literally done everything you said. I mean, you've got this one by Keir Starmer.
I just want to point out, United States at the top there as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, the one that didn't lockdown's doing the best, and yet you're complaining about us being at the bottom there. What's different?
So what, are they now on Trump's side? They're now Trumpists? Open the economy, liberate whatever, you know, Arkansas
liberate
or whatever.
The Midlands.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. Well, it's liberate London at this point, you know, but like, exactly. Now they've taken the Trumpian position because the Conservatives have done what they asked for. And oh my God, it's had a negative effect. What a surprise. But I mean, you can see this negative effect everywhere, right? So the next one is just Argos. Argos is now closing. Or at least 420 of their stores across the country are now closing, right? Sainsbury's owns Argos, and a bunch of Sainsbury's have closed as well. The one that I'm most concerned about is the local one here that was 50 years old that's now closed. But this is insufferable. So any standalone Argos store, which has not reopened since March, will be closed permanently, which is 420 of their stores. So that's just another like high street institution that's just being phased out because of these lockdowns. And Argos isn't like one of those stores that relies purely on the shopfront either. So if it's even affecting like major stores like Argos who have delivery services, then it's how much deeper can this go, you know? And yet Keir Starmer tweeted out this. The fucking, I shouldn't swear.
The gall of it though.
It's the gall of it, right? Rishi Sunak has presided over the worst recession of any major economy, and now he's clobbering families with his council tax hike. The British people are paying the price for Conservatives' incompetence. It's like, dude, he's doing what you asked for. You wanted lockdowns. You wanted, like, you know, what was it, the funds that, you know, like lockdown relief funds or whatever to be
furlough.
Given to people. Furlough, that's it, yeah. You wanted all of this. You've been demanding it. And you said, oh, Boris, if you lock down all this, I'll support you. And when the consequences of what you've demanded come in from the Conservatives, you say, oh, see, Conservatives bad. So is it not your policies that are bad? You're seeing the active consequence of your own policies and you're blaming it on the Conservatives. And it's like, what would you have done different? Like, I can't stand it. I'm so angry about all of this. Just the raw hypocrisy of it really pisses me off.
But this is one of the reasons I'm actually not too, like, I'm disappointed, but I'm not angry with the Conservatives in the sense that I know that if there was the opposition in charge, nothing would be different.
It'd be worse. And it would have come in sooner and it'd be more heavy-handed and the police would be given more powers, and we'll get into what the police are doing shortly. But like I said, it's just insufferable watching them, seeing the consequences of their own policies being played out before their eyes and going, wow, this is a problem.
The right-wingers did this.
Yeah, this is the right-wingers. You know, we should have followed Donald Trump and opened up the economy. Like, just why does anyone listen to the Labour Party on anything for any reason ever? They don't know what they're talking about. They're a party of like single English degree holding midwits who don't understand what's going on, who don't care about our historic liberties and what the actual consequence, the long term consequence that this is going to have on the country. And then when they start getting presented with it, they can't accept that it's their own fault. And it's the Conservatives' fault for being so goddamn weak on it. Boris should have just stuck to his guns. No, we're not going to lock down over Christmas. We're not cancelling Christmas. I'm not Cromwell. I'm not some sort of Labour Puritan. We are going to let people be free. And unfortunately, you know, unfortunately, life happens around them, whether you like it or not. But anyway, so in as a consequence of us going into all of this because of this new strain, I think, and it's hard to draw a direct causal connection for the reason, but the reason being given by everyone and their mother banning people from Britain flying to their country is this new strain of coronavirus. But it's hard to imagine that this new strain of coronavirus would have been taken so seriously, because there are dozens and dozens and dozens of strains of coronavirus at this point from the original one that came from Wuhan, because it mutates. All viruses mutate as they go around the world. And I was looking at like the BBC provided charts and graphs and things like this, and I was looking at these on, and it's like, right, so there are dozens of them. Would this one have been noticed had the British government not made a fuss about it? You know, would it have been something that people would have been, oh God, we don't want this, because they're saying it's increasingly contagious, but there's no evidence for this. You know, we can't prove that.
It's unproven.
Exactly. Well, yeah, it's unproven. So, okay.
But that's the point. There's no evidence one way or the other.
So now we can't actually travel anywhere in the world because of an unproven allegation that Boris himself has propped up that is in service of Keir Starmer. So now if we can get the maps up, like, it's Europe. I mean, that's actually out of date now, really. Can we get to the next one? Because we've got an updated election. Here we go. This is the world that won't allow Britain to travel to it. So you've got France, Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium, Italy, Switzerland, Poland, Czech Republic.
So those are flights that are all banned, all the red ones.
Norway, Denmark, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, India.
Oh no!
All places
Iran
I would have.
Is banned. Yeah. What would we do?
But it's just like, right, okay, and this has happened in literally the last few hours. All of these extra announcements.
So my understanding is freight was banned from France. I think a few other countries joined that as well. I think they've now reversed it, at least for the lorries at Dover. But
yes,
it's you know, developing situation. Do you want me to give the argument? Because I have an argument in favor of this.
Come on then.
So I would say that this is somewhat comparable to Wuhan. So the administration in Wuhan at the time, you know, some criticisms that can't be compared. Obviously, trying to shut down your doctors from warning about it, arresting them, you know, threatening their families, all sorts of things. Yeah. But the things we can compare is, so they, my understanding is the Communist Party officials knew that this virus was being spread. And then they had the upcoming New Year's celebrations. And they let the New Year's celebrations go ahead because they didn't want to, you know, be unpopular, show that they had to close down or there were any problems because it's a socialist system. Mm-hmm. So the virus spread and then it got worse. So, and there's a lot of uncertainty at the time about what the virus was, how bad it was. I mean, you remember, yep, everyone was unsure. So I think it's comparable in that sense, where you can look at Boris and his administration, where they're saying, okay, there's, as you say, they're not really sure how bad it is. But if it is massively more infectious, the right thing to do is to, at the source, close down and do extreme measures in the same way you would with any virus when it's starting up. You know, what they should have done in Wuhan is shut down on the first day, which means we wouldn't be in this global situation, or at least it wouldn't be as bad. So the argument I would make is, if, you know, I want to be in favor of Boris's move on this, mm-hmm, was that, well, he doesn't really know, and it would be irresponsible for him to do nothing. The more responsible thing for him to do would be to say, well, this could be worse, it could be much worse, so we'll shut down, and if it turns out to be nothing, you know, oh well, but it's better safe than sorry, essentially.
Well, I mean, that is one way of looking at it, but also the possibility is that actually this is no more dangerous to people than the previous one had been, which itself is not actually very dangerous. I mean, the average age of fatality is 82, whereas the average life expectancy in the country is 81.
So I think we haven't mentioned the mortality rate, as we understand, or at least Boris and the teams understand as well, is the same. So the mortality is the same. It's just the infection rate that's changed.
But we don't know that.
As, you know, they're arguing it's probably changed.
Theoretically, no, it's theoretically possible that that's the case. They haven't got the data to confirm this yet. And yet Boris did say this in his speech announcing this tier four lockdown. And so that was irresponsible, in my opinion. But I mean, you can make the case, but you can look at the harm that it's done by reacting too quickly. Because like with all things, there's lots and lots of different consequences from large actions like this. And a lot of these will be unforeseen and they will go on for years. So it's a toss-up. You've got to make the decision.
There's the thing as well. Even if I do accept every, you know, point I just made as being completely true and therefore he's doing the responsible thing, the way this was done, I don't think anyone could agree this can be done right. Because as you said, they knew about it since October being around. And then they see it overtaking, or at least, you know, taking mm-hmm. over the other strains throughout the early months of November, December.
And nothing was said.
Nothing was said. And then you think the people in London right now, let's just take London. I know the southeast and south and the east have it. Hmm. But they're preparing to go and live with their family for another week for Christmas time. So mm-hmm. they've got nothing in the fridge. They've got, you know, they're all packed to go. And then they get told by Boris, oh, by the way, none of you can leave the city. So all of you have now got to go food shopping. So mm-hmm. if you think this is as bad as it is, you've just forced, what, a few million people to go shopping all in the same sort of...
To empty supermarkets because France has closed the borders.
Because they were open at the time of Sunday.
Sure, but like that's not going to last.
But there's the other point, which is he did this, I think, 4 p.m. instead of waiting till the evening. So you get people going out and panic buying because you want to get your Christmas shopping done early. You want to get food shopping done. And also people, as we'll get into, leaving the S-hole that is London.
Leaving the quarantine zone, I think we can just call it. Yeah. So basically, I don't think that the way that the government's handled this has been very good at all. And I think the kind of panicked air of action that they've taken has encouraged all of these countries to say, yeah, we better do something. Because this strain that's been going around for ages is apparently way worse, even though there's no proof that it's way worse. But more importantly, I think they'll probably start finding this strain elsewhere because it's been circulating for 2 months now.
Yeah, my understanding is Denmark believes they've got some of it. I think Norway as well. So
again, all of these lockdowns, these panic measures, after the horse has bolted, okay, shut the stable door, but that's not going to prevent the horse from carrying on charging. And so that's terrible and ridiculous. Christmas is over for, well, people in tier four.
Probably about a third of this country.
Yeah, about a third of the country, which isn't us, thankfully, because we're in the southwest. See? Set up an organisation in London, they said. You'll want to be in London, they said. So, oh, no. I didn't know this was going to happen, but I knew something was going to happen. And so then you get, like, Nigel Farage tweets out, Christmas cancelled, thank you, China, which went well on Twitter. And then you've got this guy called Chen Weihao, who is a... with Chinese state-affiliated media, which means he is a mouthpiece for the CCP.
Practically state-run media.
State-run media, of course. There's no such thing as freedom of the press in China. And he says, wear a mask and stop talking shit. Which, I mean, yeah, okay, that seems like a pithy Twitter response, but Chen, do you realize how unbelievably outsider you seem when you say that? Like, there's no way that Kay Burley would say something quite like that, in that sort of manner. You know, it would be definitely not couched in a swear word, and it would be something that was slightly more respectable. That is the domineering attitude of the master speaking there. And like I said, even Kay Burley wouldn't approach it like that. That is an unacceptable way to talk to any British politician or public figure or anything like that from the racist, genocidal shitheels in the Communist Party. I don't want to hear that sort of goddamn attitude coming out of them. But we'll carry on. We'll get to the Super Chats afterwards.
I wanted to say, Chen's actually quite famous for this. So he's,
I bet he is.
He does it to Australian politicians, yeah. All sorts. And it's why I think he's going to get waxed a bit. But I just want to make the point. He did this in response to, I think it was Nancy Pelosi or something, that said that what was happening in Hong Kong was terrible. And he just tweeted underneath, I can't breathe, and then posted it on his Weibo account. And people on Weibo were just like, yeah, and I can't tweet because Twitter's banned in China.
Yeah.
But the fact that he keeps doing this, so he may have been able to get away with this with the US and France and Australia, but you'll notice we mentioned before that the collapsing relationship we have with China, even with that, the Chinese ambassadors are saying nothing like they are with other countries. They're not being bullish. Mm-hmm. And yet I think him being bullish like this will actually get him called into an office.
But this is unacceptable. And China is being a bully across the world stage now because they feel they have the power to. And we have to be able to stand up to it. But anyway...
Yeah, I'm glad the mask is slipping, but I don't think the CCP will actually appreciate him doing this.
Yeah, yeah. Let your people use Twitter first, Chen, before we talk. But anyway, so let's go on to what Tier 4 is. So as you know, we've seen it, in the southeast of England, there has been rising corona cases. It's now up to around 133 per 100,000, which is not actually that ridiculous. It's not the highest it's been. But anyway, doesn't matter. The NHS load from the coronavirus is what I want to talk about here. Because, you know, saying it's 133 per 100,000 doesn't sound like much. And it sounds like, well, okay, why are we even talking about this? And so let's go on to the coronavirus load on the NHS and just the general load. So according to the coronavirus government data, so if we can go to the next one, sorry. This is the official government data. And yesterday, it's gone down. So the number of people in hospital with COVID-19 is less than 19,000 people. We have like 120,000 beds, overnight beds, in the NHS in the UK. So this is not some sort of record-breaking number. It's not something that appears to be putting the NHS into any particular danger. And as you can see, like, it's been 247,000 people since, or 249,000 people now, sorry, since the start of recording, which is in March. And this is, if we just trace a timeline quickly, going into the next one. So you got the lockdown that was announced on the 23rd of March 2020. It was eased on the 4th of July, so the big bulk of the early summer there, sort of like late spring, early summer. And then the second lockdown was for the month of November. And so the first lockdown was announced when there was like 3,000 patients per day, people being admitted to the NHS a day. So 3,000 people a day were going to the NHS for treatment. Or 3,000. It began at 2,000 and peaked at 3,000, sorry. And then there was a steady decline off that until it was fewer than 300 in July. And so I thought it was worth just looking at the NHS, the government's official NHS data for England about the number of beds, the overnight beds they have in the hospital. Because I can't make head nor tail of these statistics in relation to the fear-mongering that is coming from the Labour Party, the Conservative Party, and the media. Like, looking at the official data, I can't really see what they're so afraid of. So this, for the first quarter of 2020, the NHS's data, they had 118,000 beds. I'm just going to do it to the nearest 100,000. I haven't got any graphs or anything for this. I just got the spreadsheets that they give you. But this for the first quarter of 2020. So April and June, right? This is at the height of the infections. This is when 3,000 or 2,000 people a day were being admitted to the NHS, and, you know, they need the overnight beds, they need all this sort of thing. And out of these 118,000 beds, only 76,000 were occupied. That's 64% total, with zero at 100%. In the second quarter, so after the lockdown, July to September, so after in late summer, they had 120,000 beds, so 2,000 more, with 93,000 occupied, which is again a 77% occupied in total, with one being at 100%. And this was Norfolk Community Health and Care NHS Trust, where it had 70 out of 70 beds used. So the NHS is not overburdened. I don't think a reasonable interpretation of these statistics is that the NHS is overburdened. You say, well, okay, well, how do you know? What's the comparison? Well, I guess the comparison could be the previous years, couldn't it? Because if you look at the first quarter of 2019, April to June pre-pandemic, the NHS actually had 128,000 beds, with 113,000 of these occupied, which makes an 88.2% total. Again, with 0 100%, and
that's 20% higher capacity.
That's 20% higher capacity.
As in usage capacity.
Yeah, usage capacity. Yeah, well, yeah. Over, in fact, 24% higher compared to the quarter one, and they had 10,000 extra beds in the NHS. So we've scaled down from this time, or the first quarter last year, there were 10,000 fewer beds. And it's like, okay, what's going on? And you can compare it to the second quarter of 2019, which is 127,000 beds with 111,000 occupied, 88% in total, with two at 100%, which are the bonnet, you know, whichever ones, it doesn't matter which ones they are. And then you can go back to quarter one of 2018, where you had 128,000 beds with 112,000 occupied. So it's, and then quarter two, 127,000 beds with 111,000 occupied. So it's about 88% for the previous successive years is the normal working load for the NHS. And we are currently at 77%.
Okay, so I think there's one argument here, though, which is that, of course, a lot of people haven't been going to the hospital for things that they've had scheduled or because of accidents, because of fear of getting coronavirus in hospital, which is a reasonable one. I know people who went there and then got coronavirus and have had to stay there.
Yeah.
It sucks. So there's that. So you have a lot less people coming in for normal things.
Yeah.
But also, that's just beds. That doesn't tell us critical care. Mm-hmm. So my understanding is we have about 4,000 critical.
Well, do we have that data? That's the thing.
We only got last year's data. They don't give you this year's data, which is irritating. Yeah. Like, I looked on a government website and they just said, can you have this data? No, was the response.
Yeah. So we can't make any informed judgment about anything about the coronavirus pandemic from NHS data. See, so what am I supposed to compare it to?
That's the thing. I was going to make the point that usually we have 4,000 critical care beds. You know, I think they're about 80% usage as well normally. Mm-hmm. So you'd want to actually compare them, because being in the hospital with COVID is bad, obviously.
Yeah.
But being on a ventilator and in a critical care bed, that's where it really matters. Because that's what.
But we actually know. We know how many that there are on critical care at the moment. 1,364.
So we usually have 4,000 beds and 1,000 of them are occupied by COVID patients?
Or on ventilation specifically.
Okay.
These are just the raw number of overnight beds that they have. So if you're sick with COVID and you go to the hospital, a ventilator or not, you're going to be using one of these beds.
So our normal beds are doing fine. They're,
if we've got 4,000 beds normally...
I mean the 100,000.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're doing fine. Yeah. The critical ones...
Well, if we've only got 1,364 on ventilation and we've got 4,000 beds normally... What's the problem?
And we won't have 4,000 this year. You know, the government, if they're responsible, will obviously have at least 5,000 or something like that.
You would think they would increase it. But I mean, honestly, if I were the administrator, I'm looking at these numbers, I'd be like, why would we increase anything? We seem to have all the resources at hand that we need. And it seems that the hospitals have not once this year been overflowing. And in fact, if anything, we can actually scale back a bit, which they have actually done. Where's the panic? Well, I'm just saying, if I'm reading the data wrong, let me know. If I'm missing some data from this year's one where they haven't released it, well, what can I do?
I'm trying to think. I mean, maybe they're saying, maybe you could argue with this new rise in infectivity. Let's just say it's true, just for the sake of argument. Then you could have a massive increase in the amount of people who need to go into hospital, and therefore we'd reach 100%. Because if once you start reaching 100%, that's really bad.
Obviously.
You don't want people being denied access to ventilators because you just don't have them. So that's the only argument I can come up with, though.
Yeah, but we're nowhere near that point.
We're not near that.
We're running significantly under the normal usage of the NHS this year. I don't know what to say. Why? Okay, well then... Keir Starmer, save the NHS. Keir, I think we've done that, mate. I think the NHS has actually
done a pretty good job.
Yeah, it's actually entirely to their credit that they seem to have done a good job, and the British public, I guess, aren't going in for things that they don't feel are major ailments or something like that. You know, everyone has actually been fairly responsible here, and it seems that the system is actually working quite well. Like, if I was in charge of the system, I'd be proud of the accomplishment of the NHS to be able to handle the coronavirus. So it was more effective than a regular year's work, you know, like that would be something I'd be crowing about.
I don't know why the government doesn't.
Neither do I. But then the government seemed to be rudderless in all of these things. They don't seem to understand what would be a good thing to promote and what would make them look strong and how you could improve the country. But anyway, let's go to the Evening Standard's article about this, because this is why you just can't trust the media. Now, I'm not saying that this has been done mendaciously. I'm not saying they're deliberately trying to deceive, because I think it's entirely possible they simply just didn't go through the day. Because this took me a couple of hours last night. You know, I had to download these spreadsheets, pull them all up into various documents, and sit there going through tables and numbers. Terribly boring, right? And I can understand that a lot of people haven't done this. And so they see, as they're reporting and has been, told, like, the NHS England website, they'll put out a thing saying these are the numbers without any particular context. And so
they're meant to be read by people who understand the numbers.
Yes. And if you're just some random coke-addled journalist who's looking at which they all are.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, I know. Coke-addled journalist who's got in early off a bender last night, didn't go to bed until 4 o'clock, still stinks of booze, and is like, right, okay, I've got to write an article about something. Oh, God, yeah.
Got to write five a day.
Exactly. Got to write five a day. Really? Five a day?
I bet people at the Daily Mail have to write some stupid.
I'll have to get the other guys working hard.
No, but that's why it's bad. That's why it's bad, because they just write any old.
Yeah, which is why Lutzis.com is good. We don't rush, because we are supported financially by the people who subscribe to the website, and so we are actually not beholden to anyone. So we don't have to rush, and it means we can do a good job. But anyway.
But that's how you end up with this.
That's how you end up with this, right? According to the latest data from NHS England, the percentage of occupied NHS hospital beds in England has reached nearly 89% for the week ending December the 13th. Now, we don't have this quarter as official publicly released NHS data, so they must have got this from within the NHS themselves or something like this. It only goes up to the second quarter, which is September so far. I'm sure that in a week or two they'll have released this data, and then we'll be able to read it for ourselves. But it's reached nearly 89% for the week ending December 13th. So, totally in line with the previous historical averages of 88%. That's 88.7%, whatever it is. Nearly 89%. Yeah, that's like normal.
Within the permissible barriers of any other time.
It's not just within the permissible barriers. This is totally normal. If you were going to predict from the previous year what you think bed usage will be at this time of the year, you'd say, oh, it'd be about 88, 89%. Because that's what it was the year before, and the year before. I'm probably going back further, but I just didn't bother going back any further, right? So this is totally normal. Some 2,543 COVID-19 patients were recorded in London on December the 16th, up from 1,787 a week ago. This isn't a city with 8 million people. 8 million people, and they've got 2,500 of them who are in hospital with COVID. It's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. I mean, we've got tens of thousands of hospital beds in London, you know, and thousands of them being unused, and they're acting like there's some tremendous problem. Like, they didn't even say the first peak wave in London was 5,200 patients. That's still very low. It's still well within the NHS's operating capacity.
And if not, you can just expand capacity.
Of course you can. But this is, as I say, the capital has recorded some of the highest bed occupancy numbers. Sure, but nothing that is outside of the norm. Which just means the rest of England and Wales are just at a lower rate. So, okay, the average percentage of occupied beds in London ending the week, December 13th, was at 95% in the Royal Free London NHS Trust hospitals, 95% in Lewisham, Greenwich hospitals, 96% in King's College hospitals. So there are three hospitals where it's higher than that, but they're still not at full capacity. And if you are worried about those particular hospitals, again, open new wards, get more beds, put the money in. That's, if you're going to spend my money for something, that's a fine way to use it.
Or you could just transfer them as well.
You could transfer them. You could do whatever.
You know, if you've got hospitals that are sitting around at, you know, 70%, well,
which we do,
use them.
Yeah, there are hospitals at like 60 and 59%, things like that. You know, like the usage of the hospitals is dramatically, markedly lower than other years.
This is all government run, just for anyone who doesn't know for some reason. Like, all of these hospitals are run by the state.
Yeah, and they could just do whatever they want. It's not like they've been interfering with anyone's rights as business owners or anything like that. But there's nothing to do because no one's at full capacity. This isn't No, you know, the NHS is not overflowing with victims of COVID. So why are they reporting it like this is some tremendously scary, unprecedented event? Well, that's what the media always does. I think that's what they default to. And so anyway, let's go on to what actually Tier 4 means. So we've got a map of Tier 4 at the moment. The dark brown, I guess, is Tier 1, which doesn't really exist anymore.
Look at this trash website. How many ads?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, do you need another one?
Yeah. Also, you won't get bombarded with ads on our website. See, all the more reason to go there. Tier 2 is the red. Tier 3 is the red. And then Tier 2 is the sort of orange, and the dark red is Tier 4. And as you can see, it's London and the southeast. We're very close to being in Tier 4, apparently. We're right next to it, in fact. But we're still in Tier 3 or Tier 2. Can you scroll up a little bit, John? Two. Sorry. Is it Tier 2? Right, okay, yeah. We're still in Tier 2, which means we can go for dinner after this.
We can go for work lunches, things
like
that.
Yes, a work lunch, yes. But anyway, so going on to the government's guidelines, and this is what I really hate. So when talking about like the overarching rule of the administrative state, this is it in action. This is the kind of thing you can expect from it. So this is the government's guidance. What does Tier 4 mean? And so they say, you must not leave or be outside of your home except for where you have specific purpose or a, quote, reasonable excuse. Well, I mean, whatever excuse I give, I'm going to think is reasonable. So, you know, I mean, but a reasonable excuse, they give us a definition of this, right? Because it's not what you think is a reasonable excuse, what they think is a reasonable excuse, obviously. So.
Is suicide one?
I don't know if suicide is legal, actually.
No, I mean, if you are a person who's having... Because a lot of people have spoken about mental health problems.
Yeah.
You know, if I feel like committing suicide and I want to leave to go meet someone so I don't commit suicide, is that reasonable or not?
Well, actually, I think it might be, actually. Let's go through it. Work and volunteering, essential activities, fulfilling legal obligation, education and childcare, meeting others and care. So this is the essential sinews of civilization that will still keep running, right? So Tier 4, if you're some sort of essential worker and you've got all these things to do, or you've got to take your kids to school, so you can run a life. You know, you can run your life, and you should run your life, obviously. But it's everything that's not essential, right? It's everything that's fun. Again, anything the Puritans would have taken dramatic exception to that caused licentiousness and carnal pleasure or whatever it is, all of that has been banned. But you can leave home to visit people in your support bubble or to provide informal childcare for children aged 13 and under as part of the childcare bubble, to provide care for vulnerable people, to provide emergency assistance, attend a support group of up to 15 people, or respite care where care is being provided to a vulnerable person or a person with a disability or is a short break in respect of a looked after child. Like, how micromanaging is this? They've sat there and bureaucratic means going, right, well, they've got to add that, got to add that, got to add that. But on the plus side, if you need mental health care, you can probably still get it, right? You can leave for exercise and recreation, same rules as applied as before. Medical reasons, such as harm and compassionate visits, and communal worship and life events. So it's like, right, okay.
So going to church is still fine.
Yeah, going to church, going to mosque, going to synagogue, going to temple, like things that you would have thought would actually have spread coronavirus.
Because we banned those last time.
Yeah, because they spread coronavirus. But you can't go to the pub, and you can't leave the country, apparently. Meeting others safely, and so this again, I'm just going to read this out because I want you to like get a feel for the kind of invasive bureaucracy and micromanaging decisions that are going to be made about your life from civil servants, right? In general, you must not meet with another person socially or undertake any activities with another person. No hanging out with your mates, right? However, you can exercise or meet in public outdoors or an outdoor place with the people you live, your support bubble as part of a childcare bubble with one other person. You should minimize time spent outside your home. When around other people, stay 2 meters apart from anyone not in your household, meaning the people you live with or your support bubble. Where this is not possible, stay 1 meter apart with extra precautions, e.g. wearing a face covering. You must not meet socially indoors with family or friends unless they are part of your household or support bubble. You can exercise or visit a public outdoor place by yourself, with the people you live with your support bubble, or when on your own with one person from another household. Children under 5 and up to 2 carers for a person with a disability who needs continuous care are not counted towards the outdoors gathering limit. Public places outdoors include parks, beaches, countryside accessible to the public, forest, public gardens, whether or not you pay to enter them, allotments, grounds of a heritage site, outdoor sports courts and facilities, playgrounds. You cannot meet people in a private garden unless you live with them or have formed a support bubble with them. Sure, why not?
This kind of reminds me of the Taliban, how they were just arbitrarily banning things in Afghanistan.
Exactly. That's what this is like. This is like rule under the Taliban, where they've got a bunch of Quranic injunctions they're trying to apply.
This thing, but not this thing. Why? Because God says so.
Exactly. You know, women can do this, but they can't drive cars. Why? What did Muhammad have to say about cars? Nothing. You know, but we've got an ancient sort of principle we're trying to apply to a modern era. But anyway, so...
Church, but not pub.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all of these things... The bureaucratic micromanagement of what you should be able to freely choose to do in your daily life is it. And now this, as you can see from this, the length of the article, this goes on and on and on and on. All of these tiny little things, tiny little decisions that normally we would allow people to make for themselves, because obviously this is just
who's
living your life.
This?
Exactly. Who's reading this? Like, who is this for?
What if they put, right? Like 10, 20 million people in tier 4?
24, I think, something like that.
So how many of them are going to read this nonsense?
Yeah, exactly. How many of them are going to know any of this, right? And if you break these rules, oh, you can get the Stasi down upon you. As they say, the police can take action against you if you meet in larger groups. This includes breaking up illegal gatherings and issue fines, which are fixed penalty notice. You can be given a fixed penalty notice of £200 for the first offence, doubling for further offences up to a maximum of £6,400. If you hold or are involved in holding an illegal gathering of over 30 people, the police can issue fines of £10,000, which is why Piers Corbyn got convicted. And what they deferred his fine in the end. But
has that MP been convicted yet? Because he had that meeting of 27 people. And then Priti Patel threw him under the bus and said, yeah, well, he should get a fixed penalty notice.
Well, he should.
I'd love to see it.
If we're all getting these fixed penalty notices.
Because he was the guy who was promoting a Christmas lockdown. Mm-hmm. And then the next day literally went out with 27 people to have dinner.
Was he a Labour MP?
He was Conservative. Oof. But he was a Black Lives Matter supporter. So,
yeah. So he's a Labour MP, yeah. Right. infiltrators get the lockdown too. And for some reason... there's massive, massive support for these lockdowns, at least according to a snap poll by YouGov that I didn't receive or you didn't receive. No one ever receives any of these.
It got released the same day.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would suggest that this is basically analogous to a Twitter poll, where it's people who follow YouGov and have signed up for their emails and stuff like this, all self-selected groups of people who then get an email through from YouGov who... I guess have just published the results of what they got back that very same day. So the Snap YouGov poll has found that 3/4, 74% of people support the creation of Tier 4, including 48% who say they strongly support it, with only 17% opposed. The YouGov and a YouGov poll from earlier in the week had already shown that most Britons, 57%, had wanted to scrap the relaxation entirely. So basically Keir Starmer is the voice of Britain when he says, lock us all down. The British public want everyone locked down. I mean, I would like to see the demographics of people who participate in YouGov polls, because I do not think that this is going to be representative of the country as a whole.
Well, we know it's not, because of the footage.
Well, yeah, because people are actually doing things and they're not abiding by the rules. But anyway, apparently there was strong backing for the government's decision, with 2/3, 67% of the public supporting the move, with only 1/4 opposed to the rules revision, which is the relaxation of rules that Boris had proposed over Christmas that he went back on. So apparently the public love lockdowns. They just can't wait to have their high streets further destroyed and to be separated and isolated from their families. Oh, come on. Come on, don't make me see my grandma over Christmas. But then I guess we'll move on to the bit of London. Any thoughts to add to any of this so far? Because I know I'm raging about this, but this is pissing me off.
I understand why it's irritating you, but... I know, I mean, you're very much more civil liberties over everything, and I'm...
Yeah, I am now.
Especially living through this. Like, I think everyone's getting a bit radicalised.
Well, I was pretty civil liberties before, but now I'm just very much like, yeah, okay, well, we actually have to have a Runnymede moment with Boris at some point. It was like, this is not happening again, Boris. But it's not on.
I do want to point out, just for the Australians, because they don't get much of a word in, but I remember when I did that document on them about how bad it got in Victoria.
Yeah.
Like, you read the Taliban-esque list of provisions from the Quranic verses of Matt Hancock, and the in Victoria it was even worse. Like, if you wanted to do this, so this is going to work, you had to get a work permit. Like, literally, like, you're living in a prison. Like, yes sir, I'm allowed to go out and do the work.
Jesus Christ. The famous tweet that the Australian police have put out: can I walk my dog? And they're like, no,
walking your dog is prohibited,
it's haram.
Like, going out, I think, to go out to exercise as well, I don't know if you're meant to get a permit, or that was also restricted more than the British.
And so, the Australians had 905 deaths.
Yeah.
That is mad.
The cases were absolutely minor.
Yeah. This is what we're meant to be emulating. But, okay, hang on a sec. Let's
down some tea.
Yeah, have a slug of tea. And not East India tea, unfortunately, today. Let's talk about the escape from London. I didn't mean for this to just be me talking the entire time, but there's been so much here that's been going on that it's like...
Well, I'll say something about this then, because the YouGov poll we just looked at in the previous segment, the fact that, 75% of the British public are completely supportive of this. Well, okay, that's a stated preference. They state, maybe. Let's just assume that it's a representative poll and not some Stalinist-esque nonsense. Then we have the revealed preference, which is what people do when this actually happens. And overwhelmingly, it's people leaving London because they don't want to live under this.
Yes.
They're not interested.
Although they could be argued that this is the sort of 25% of people who disagreed with the lockdown. And maybe 75% of London is just sat there before a shrine of Matt Hancock burning incense and thanking him for saving their lives and making sure that their grandmother lives in solitude for an extra year or two. Who knows? But anyway, as you can see, there are. Can we play this video just in the background, just so people can see?
This is the Eurostar in Euston Station.
Yep, this is the the Eurostar. Can we mute the sound because it's just people walking by? But as you can see, massive queues for people in the international parts to go on the Eurotunnel, the Tunnel, and get to France and escape from London now. Which I mean, I can't see Kurt Russell, but I'm sure he's in there somewhere. This is also replicated in Heathrow, if we can go to the next one, where you can see people desperately trying to leave the United Kingdom by any means necessary. It's just packed out in Heathrow, not very socially distanced. I imagine that Lord Inquisitor Hancock is very unhappy about this. In fact, I don't have to imagine.
He
actually came out on Sophie Ridge's Sunday show and... As it says, blasts irresponsible people who are trying to flee from his tyranny. He says...
Like, I'm pretty sure that image there at the top in this footage is also from St. Pancras.
Yep.
So it's not just one train station or one airport. Like,
it's all of London.
All of them.
Yeah, it's all of them. I'm not surprised. I'd be getting the hell out as well. Like, these people have gone mad. Mad with power.
But this is part of the stupidity, as we mentioned. Like, okay, if we just take the argument that it's more infectious, therefore this is all justified and blah, 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 blah. Well, in which case, why on earth did you do it with time for, I'm guessing, at least hundreds of thousands of people to leave?
Like, why? That's a good question.
If you sincerely believe this is as bad as you're saying it is, why would you not wait till 8 p.m., 9 p.m. to do this on TV as you did last time? To then show that, no, we need to make sure you don't leave.
Why would you make a big announcement about it that would spook people as well? Because if you're like, oh God, there's a growing number of cases of this new virus in London, it's spreading slowly, we better do something. And effectively, you like, you know, some sort of spider nest or something, you smack it, and then everyone splits and runs off in different directions. And now you've got it spreading everywhere. You know, you are causing the spread of this by saying, oh, we're going to have draconian lockdowns because people are fleeing. And doubtless loads of these people are infected with this new strain of coronavirus. And you're going to send this all across the country and across other places around the world by just fear-mongering about it. This wouldn't have happened if you weren't fear-mongering.
But even with that as a consequence of being so strict, like, let's just say the strictness is justified, as I said. But, you know, they were able to shut down, I think it was ferries and planes after such a time. Then why didn't you just wait until you could do that for the trains? Because if you seriously believe this is as bad as you're saying, well, all you've just done, as you pointed out, is you've hit the spider's web and now people have gone all over the country with it.
Yeah.
Great job.
So you are directly responsible for encouraging and facilitating the spread of this now by putting the fear of God into them that they're going to be trapped in their homes alone over Christmas. What a bloody mistake that was.
Like, even if I believe you, you've done this terribly. Like, this is the worst possible way to manage it.
So, I mean, and what's worse is now you've validated Keir Starmer's criticism of you.
Yeah. like Keir Starmer's getting a golden boy opportunity out of this, even for all the nonsense and the obvious...
It's actually no-lose situation for Keir. I can demand the most draconian lockdowns, and when you fuck those up, I can blame you for doing what I wanted. It's amazing.
Like, they're going up in the polls, every single poll I see.
Yeah, it's mad. But Matt Hancock, sorry, Imam Hancock, said this was clearly totally irresponsible behaviour. The chief medical officer was absolutely clear that people should unpack their bags. I think that it's relatively small numbers and the large vast majority of people throughout the whole pandemic followed the rules, have been responsible and played their part. Hancock added that the new strain was out of control, which necessitated new tighter restrictions. I just want to say, I'm seeing this in a more engaging way than Matt Hancock would ever talk, and I don't know why. I'm making what he says sound at least interesting and exciting. I'll try and make it more bureaucratic and dull, which is how he speaks about everything.
Oh, please don't.
Everyone, especially in tier 4 areas, quote, needs to behave as if they might well have the virus, and this is the way we can get it under control and keep people safe. So Matt Hancock has actually taken the most extreme position on this, right? We're not going to test people for virus. We're not going to like make population extrapolations from that. No, we're just going to assume that everyone has it. So every single person is now essentially a potential, or we'll treat them as a carrier of COVID for his rationale and his analysis of the situation. It's ridiculous. It's just extreme.
The really weird way to look at it.
It's like they've been in a bunker for the last year or something, and now you get the end of this bunker mentality where they're just like, it's boiling in their head. They're looking at these numbers. Oh God, the R number, the R number, and everyone's just going about their day, Matt. I mean, look how everyone's just getting on with their lives, man. And you're like, God, the R number. It's just like this very abstract, in your own head, obsession. And now London is essentially going into like a police lockdown where the police are actually, they have powers to stop you leaving London, which is something I've been lobbying for years. We should make sure no one's allowed to leave London.
In fact, give it independence. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe build a wall. I don't know. But this was actually the police chiefs from London had to come out and actually correct Matt Hancock on this, because he appeared to suggest on Sophie Ridge's show that the police would be asked to stop families attempting to leave tier 4 areas. So literally escape from New York style lockdown, right? Like with I don't know what the extent that he was thinking, but police chiefs later had to come out and say, no, this isn't actually going to happen.
Your Holiness, we can't do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it, right? On stopping cars, National Police Chiefs Council's chair, Martin Hewitt, said, "We will step up visibility to encourage the public to follow the rules, but there is no intention to establish roadblocks or routinely stop vehicles." As in, we're not going to set up checkpoints yet. Yet. And that's the important thing. Yet. These things will come, I'm sure of it, right? On travelling in and out of Tier 4, Hewitt said that police would continue to engage with the public and encourage them to follow the rules, and added, where necessary, will enforce through the use of the fixed penalty notices. The idea that we're discussing now, whether we're going to have roadblocks on for leaving London, with the police fining you and giving you fixed penalty notices of up to £6,400 for trying to leave the capital city of the United Kingdom, I mean, If we went back a year and I told you that in a year's time that's what the public discussion will be, and the health secretary will be in favour of these roadblocks and will suggest that this will be happening, and the police will have to come out and say, actually, we're not going to do that, you'd think I was mad. This is insane. This has all gone way too far, right? This is just bonkers. And I do think that it's part of a kind of there's a group of people who are very much in the same sort of culture around Westminster, but not just Westminster, in political establishments in other countries, who are reacting in this way that I feel is deeply disproportionate. We can see an example of this of British and other travellers in Germany who have been held against their will. We can get to the next one. We're at Hanover Airport and being held against our will. We were tested and prohibited from leaving the premises while we await the results. As Patrick Kinsley, a New York Times correspondent, says, foreign residents on the last flight into Berlin from London have been separated from the German citizens and will be spend the night in the airport until the test centre opens at 6 a.m. The Germans were allowed through without a test, though. So German citizens coming from London, no test for you, but the Brits, you get tested. Why?
That is weird.
Why? Why would you think the Germans don't deserve a test? Are they not at risk of carrying this disease? Is there something special and unique about the mighty Aryan German man? What is it? What is the German got about himself, imbued intrinsically about the German, that's superior to the Brits? Fuhrer Merkel, I want to know. Why are they not a risk if they're coming from London?
This doesn't make sense, because we went to Germany to give a speech in the Bundestag, and one of the things you have to do was fill in the form. And the rules were that they banned sections of the country. So at the time we went, the South was still allowed, but the North was banned.
Yeah.
So, but it was everyone from the North was banned. If a German tried to fly back from Liverpool, they would also be not allowed.
Yeah.
So why the discrimination? I am confused.
It makes no sense. It should be. If this was, exactly. It's just the German blood, you see, right? It's just more pure or something. I don't know what the German government's excuse for it is, obviously, but it's weird that falls into a, yeah, exactly. It falls into a pattern of thought and ideology that the Germans have had for, oh, it's going for back of a century now.
2,000 years, maybe?
What
I'm saying is the Germans are always the
problem. But the point is, it's irrational. Say, well, the Germans travelling from London don't need a test, but everyone else travelling from London does need a test. It's like, well, what's so special about the Germans? Surely the problem is that they're travelling from London where this new strain is. But anyway, this is all fine with London's caliph, Sadiq Khan. He totally supports these inhuman measures. He's been lobbying this for ages, actually, but he went on LBC yesterday and just said, well, you know, I'm fine with this. And he says, stay in London, follow the rules, or you might kill granny. Not quite those words, but almost those words. As in, if you don't do what he says, your grandmother is going to die, which is starting to sound...
And that's a promise.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like, Sadiq, buddy, like... Calm down. But he's been clamoring for these lockdowns for ages. I mean, even the first one he was arguing for. And since October, he was arguing for the November lockdown. And so this is, you know, completely within his normal pattern of behavior. This is what Sadiq Khan wants. He wants you trapped in London, locked at home and unable to leave, or else the old people get it. Just want to say...
Sadiq's death squads.
Sadiq's coronavirus Stasi.
He's up for re-election, isn't he? Is that a campaign promise then?
No, he postponed the election because of coronavirus. Which is amazing, isn't it? Can't we have mail-in voting, Sadiq? You can still win. If Joe Biden's proved anything, so the left can win mail-in voting.
I'm actually getting endless advertisements on my Facebook page from the Labour Party telling me to sign up for mail-in voting. And the tagline, we can win this, it's not really the best time to be putting that out.
But yeah, so Sadiq had postponed the elections because of coronavirus, because anything can be done under the rubric of coronavirus, even up until the point of suggesting blockades out of London from Matt Hancock can be done under the rubric of coronavirus. And so this is where we come back to the rule of law. This is where we come back, in fact, to the Magna Carta, because there are left-wingers who don't understand anything about English history on the significance of this document, who have been running their mouths about the Magna Carta, and I want to set the record straight. We'll frame it around a Miss Sinead Quinn, who runs West Yorkshire's Quinn Blakey Hairdressers, a local hairdressing shop run by this young lady. She was initially fined £1,000 for staying open after November the 5th during the second national lockdown. She has not paid a penny of her fines, now totaling up to £27,000, and I believe she has a crowdfunder. So if you want to search her name and crowdfunding, maybe you want to help her out, because obviously I think these fines are totally unjust. Lockdowns are totally illegitimate, morally and constitutionally, but anyway, we'll get
pretty sure
to that.
They're unlawful as well.
Well, yeah. She told police that she... Now, I don't endorse everything that she says, because she doesn't believe in the coronavirus. The coronavirus is obviously a real thing. She says she sees no proof that the virus exists, and wrongly claimed that the Magna Carta allowed her to remain open. The law she cited, Clause 61, offering 25 barons the right to lawfully dissent or rebel if they thought they were being governed unjustly, was repealed and never incorporated into English law. Right, okay. So, a couple of corrections here. The Metro don't know anything about the Magna Carta, and they shouldn't ever write about it again, because it's embarrassing that they don't understand that, and this is to Sinead's education too, the 25 barons were the guarantors of the Charter, right? So essentially like a council of barons was created that, you know, if barons left or couldn't attend, you know, they'd be replaced on. And their job was to make sure that the Magna Carta was being followed. It's not Clause 61, that's the end of it. It's actually Clause 39. And Clause 39 is actually crystal clear and totally applies to everything that we're saying here. Clause 39 is, quote, no free man shall be seized or imprisoned or stripped of his rights or possessions, that's the most notable thing, or outlawed or exiled or deprived of his standing in any other way, nor will we proceed with force against him or send others to do so, except by the lawful judgment of his equals or by the law of the land. That's the reference to the Magna Carta. no free man. It's not about barons. It's not about the king. It's about the way that the law and the government is operating and whether they are allowed to simply strip you of your possessions. Say in, I don't know, a forced lockdown because they're afraid of a disease, right? The Magna Carta explicitly states against it. Oh, but that's not law. No, that is the foundation of our law. It's not just the law. This is where it comes from. This is where our understanding of the constitutional limits of government comes from. And it is written into the various other bills and acts that have come along in the process. More about that in the premium podcast that I'll be doing this week about it, because it's really frustrating me. But the Magna Carta was repealed 70 years ago. It's like, no, it was superseded by law that was built on top of it in a modern way, because, I mean, it was 800 years old, so maybe we should update it so it's not in the original Latin anymore. Maybe it should be written in English, but it's the spirit of English common law is built on that statement. That statement, Clause 39, that's where it all comes from. That's where the proprietarian nature of liberalism comes from. It all comes from this. So jackasses who are like in the comments saying, there's no ban. Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. Stop talking. You're undermining your own rights, you morons.
They've also got to answer for the fact that people keep winning these. So I remember during the first lockdown, people keep getting fines from the police. And then they would go and counter them in the courts. And the courts kept ruling in favor of people who countered the fines.
Because common law doesn't support this. The government can't just take your possessions.
Yeah, people were just like one woman was given a £50 fine for, what was it, being near a train station suspiciously or something like this? And she took it to court. It was just like, no, you're not fining me for this. And she won. So yes. I imagine a similar thing may end up happening with her, where the courts are just like, actually, none of this law can be applied. And the police ended up with an egg on their face the first time around. So I have no idea why they wouldn't end up with it on, second time around.
In much the same way the court did with the Section 127, saying, well, this is actually a violation of UN human rights.
It's like, well, now what?
Yeah, we've got to get rid of it. So anyway, but the point being, Magna Carta absolutely does support your rights as a free man to be able to dispose of your property as you decree, and the government can't simply take that away from them, from you. And so all of these people who are saying the authority of the Magna Carta allows me to defy your lockdown are right, morally right.
As for the specific legality, of course, consult a lawyer. But the fact that people keep winning these court cases tells me that there's something to it.
They've passed a bunch of emergency legislation that, is doubtless going to age poorly in the same way the Patriot Act did. But, morally, these people are totally in the right. The Magna Carta does support this. And it's the spirit of the Magna Carta that underpins our entire legal system. So go away for people. Go back to Germany or France or wherever it is that you think rights are constructed by the state. Because in England, it has always been the rights are constructed by you. They are inherent in you. And the Christians used to think it was given by God, but they're imbued into you by nature. This is our understanding in English-speaking countries of how rights are constructed. We have to defend that.
There's a great quote from this. I found myself in Waterstones over the weekend. And I was reading a book on UK politics. There's a quote from Gladstone talking about the House of Commons. What's the point in it? And he says that the House of Commons, you are not there to govern the country. You are there to call account the people who do.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. I'll let you read the soup chat.
Where were we?
My voice is killing me.
Not job. Where do we start, John? Can you hover over it?
These are the dates. Right. Okay.
I'll start with that one. Easy E. Carl should do a remoralization series where he just talks history and literature while at the gym. # brains and gains.
That's kind of happening, actually. Premium content. Sign up and you'll get it.
Are you going to do it while exercising?
I might do one then the other.
Be good content.
It would.
Anyway, pilot deviation. I am traveling from Utah to Texas for Xmas. Drove 15 hours yesterday. Still have 10 hours to go today. Good God. Christ, the US is big. However, I am still going to be streaming the podcast while I drive. My data plan be darned. Merry Christmas to you all, and Merry Christmas. Oh, sorry. May the commies burn in ...
So good news on that. We now have the audio embedding working on the website, so you can actually listen to the audio-only version of these podcasts.
I love how we waited till the end of it. So his data plan's still screwed.
Yeah, sorry. But for tomorrow...
But in future, possible pilot deviation.
Yes. You will be able to get easy access to the audio version only, so you can save your data plan. So thank you for letting us know.
It's like 25 hours of driving, though. Ugh.
That's horrific. Anyway, the US is massive.
Mute stream. Let the simping begin. H in the chat. Hashtag Team Hugo forever.
No. If you weren't giving us money for this, I'd ban you.
Chisel, 28. Got advice to unblock one's own heroic potential.
Got advice to unlock one's own heroic potential. Treat yourself as the protagonist in a story. And what kind of conclusion do you want your story to have? What kind of achievements do you want to have achieved in your life? What do you want people to remember about you? And if you want them to remember really dull, boring things, then keep going to your office job. If you want them to remember interesting things, take a risk. Not start a business.
Don't start a restaurant.
Yeah, don't start a restaurant. But, you know, like, build yourself. Do things.
Just make yourself better. Chisel 28, Dutch Forum for Democracy, populist, beat the cuckservative UKIP-style coup. Remoralizing stuff, cut your rotting arm off so the body won't rot with it. I don't know what's going on with Dutch politics, because, you know, it's in Dutch. But sure, if it's good, it's good, I guess.
Excellent, yeah.
Alan Jensen, I demand reparations from Moroccans to the Cornish, as well as funding for the anti-slavery monument on Cheverton Roundabout. Onin Hag Ul comrades?
That's fair. The Barbary pirates did take many a slave from Cornwall.
Yeah, there was a great politician in the chamber. Dawn Butler was mouthing off about how, you know, the black Africans who were enslaved have a unique injustice because slavery was so bad and blah, 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 blah. And then this Indian guy who's just, like, I guess Anglo-Indian by the looks of him, just stopped and went, yeah, but what about the Cornish? It's just like, didn't care. He's like, it's just as bad. Shit down. Yeah. There was nothing she could say. It was quite embarrassing.
Anyway, she is an embarrassment.
So Andrew Haley for $100. Jesus Christ, man. But thank you, I guess. Goddamn. Merry Christmas, you lobsterbacks. That's a Redcoat reference.
Yeah.
For my European friends wishing to understand the Second Amendment, know this. It's the final guarantee of all other amendments and the only place where the monopoly on force is devolved to the people. That's a great way of putting it.
Dude, we're English. We totally understand. That's where you got the idea. It's the Germans and the French who need to be taught this.
Yeah. Well, he did say to my European friends.
Yes, he did. That's true.
He is referring to the Europoles.
Yeah, that's true.
Pirate Skeleton, do you need a license to own and operate a trebuchet? Just saying. I don't know.
Look into it.
with the weapons legislation we have is all about firearms.
So. Yeah.
Bows and crossbows is doing.
Just saying.
So what you're saying is we can actually lay siege to Parliament and we wouldn't have broken any laws.
You could stand outside with a crossbow, but I don't think you could lay siege.
Well, I mean, like halfway through setting up the trebuchet, surely someone's going to come out and be like, what's this for, chaps? Is this coronavirus regulation friendly? And we'll have our masks on and be like, well, we are social distancing, officer. So you've got to pay £100 fine. Oh, here you go then.
It's like the miners' strike, except a more based version.
Yes.
Mute stream. Huguenots dominate chat. What's your thoughts? Disgusting.
maybe the Catholics were right.
A bunch of weird letters for a name, sorry. I know it's not good, but each day that goes by, I just get more and more blackpilled about almost everything.
Well, that's because it gets worse.
You missed the last couple of streams. At least those had some white pills in them.
Yeah, saying that, yeah, last Friday's was good. It was you know, moralizing. But unfortunately, yeah, the coronavirus lockdown today has not been good news.
Yeah, nothing about COVID's ever white-pilled. Mr. Everyman, you should really get your researchers to go to patents.
Sorry. Patents.google.com and search COVID-19, blah, 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 and so on. Not natural. Honestly, I don't know anything about it. And there's every chance that YouTube has prohibited that kind of discussion.
So I'm going to disavow just in case.
Disavow just in case. Sorry, man.
Royal Ulster Constabulary. London is so disgusting, it caused COVID to mutate.
Even COVID's trying to escape.
Mojo-ich. I am altering the deal. Pray I don't alter it further. Darth Boris.
Well, that's literally the position we're in. We've got nothing nothing other than the Magna Carta to be able to push back on this from. You know, so we need to understand this and be able to commit to this, because that's the only way we're going to be able to say, look, you actually don't have the right to tyrannize me because a small cadre of scientists in the Cobra group have advised you to do it. I don't know who they are and I don't care who they are. They don't get to shut down all of society because they have some numbers on a piece of paper. End of story.
Josh Lake, new COVID side effects, lockdowns, school dropouts, church closures, job losses, increased poverty, mask mandate, limited supply papers, please, government, overreach.
Yeah. I mean, they are direct consequences of COVID.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why we can't describe them as side effects. I mean, people killing themselves because they can't go out and see people.
Well, it's a direct consequence. Like the cancer deaths that are going to spike like next year.
We had them. You know, the BBC, to their credit, actually have reported on this.
Oh, I missed that.
Case after case of them doing a story on a guy who was meant to get cancer treatment. Yeah. And he's just dead now. And it's just like, well, okay. I guess that's the price we're paying.
I guess it is.
DRT is king. Sargon, did you hear AA's thoughts? Thought the Huns were German. That's a... Oopsie. His logic differentiating to Byzantines from Rome is as strained as justifying Biden's numbers.
Yeah, I went on a stream the other day and destroyed him because his historical knowledge is lacking. He's an economist, not a historian. But yeah, he needs to read more.
Ali Trope, I want all flu, cancer, and suicide deaths to be mapped out into every COVID graph just for proper context. Until then, I'd just as soon ignore COVID altogether. I don't know why. I guess with the flu one, that's why they can't, because it's so...
Well, the government records
flu... It tests positive when you do the COVID test.
Yeah, they record flu and COVID in the same category now.
But I think we should have more data on that.
More well,
to show the side effects of COVID. I don't want it to be like that many people died.
It's okay. Not just that. It's relative as well. You know, it's like, okay, so we've got, what was it, 1,300 and however many people on on ventilators. But how many do we have currently undergoing like cancer treatment? You know, because it's probably going to be way more and things like this. So it's like, you know, let's get some relative perspective here. Yeah. But yeah.
PM Roach, if the Polish government sees abortion as murder, they'll have to consider pro-choice rhetoric as incitement to violence.
Oof.
Maybe then the left will see the nefarious potential of speech codes.
Well,
perfectly legally true.
Yeah.
Like this is, we covered it in, I think it was the last podcast on Venezuela, where a guy criticizing Hugo Chavez on his COVID response.
No, was, Maduro.
Sorry, Maduro, sorry. Yeah. They just said, you're committing a hate speech violation, go to prison. And they did.
This is hate speech against the dear leader.
Yeah, so if you've got hate speech against babies who are being murdered, well...
Sorry. Don't be hate. Don't raise hate against the people oppressing you. That's racist.
Person of the year, Svadnik. Australia called for an investigation into the China virus, and now we're paying the price for it. Why is the rest of the world cucking?
Great question.
We're just too far behind.
Yeah.
I guess, because Australia gets the brunt of this. Because.
Well, yeah, they're the ones closest to China who are in opposition to what China's doing.
Yeah. Well, they also keep getting
hint, hint, New Zealand.
Thunderstorm. Well, Yule is happening no matter what so.
Well, Yule being another name for Christmas, because it's a pagan festival.
Yeah, sorry. Ardrin. The reason Hogmanay is... How do you say that?
Hogmanay? It's a Scottish thing, is it, Vicky? Hogmanay. What is it?
It's New Year's.
New Year's in Scotland, right.
Okay, the reason Scottish New Year's is more important in Scotland is because they banned Christmas for 300 years. You may ban Christ, but you'll never ban my booze.
I think they may well have banned... They banned alcohol in Wales, so... You know, don't rule it out. But I didn't realize it was banned for 300 years. Like, what? I would have to check that. I only looked at Cromwell in England. This was before the Act of Union, so it only applied to England.
Yeah, I would like to read more history if it's like that in Scotland. Unholy. Hi, all. On Thursday, you received a super chat from someone talking about setting up his own talk show. Can you shout me out as I want to talk to him? That's Unholy.
Okay.
I guess
didn't give us any way to like get him to email you or anything.
Sorry, man.
But
Eazy-E, COVID has low morbidity and can be mostly prevented by just washing your hands. And now there's a new strain. Anyone else have just the flu, bro? Vibes. Eazy-E, China lied and people died. It's a true statement.
It's true.
Chisel 28, reminder to worry about subversive figure like Morgan Le Fay.
It's a wizard from the Arthurian romance.
Okay. Long before a traitor... You can read this. This is in Arthurian language. I can't read that.
reminder to worry about a subversive figure like Morgan Le Fay long before a traitor like Sir Mordred, for she lays his groundwork years in advance. Yes, that's true. And again, why all of these old-style Arthurian romances and Robin Hood legends and all that, they didn't exist for no reason. They existed because there's real truth in them. One of them, right, there's one where Sir Gawain ends up meeting like a witch in a wood, and she ends up teaching him not to be equal to women, because what women are wanting, really, is a man who refuses to do what they say. And that's a really important thing. Because I tell you what, man, as a 41-year-old married man, that is the secret to everything.
Like, don't, putting your foot down.
Putting your foot down. Don't allow her to be your boss. But and it, essentially, the sort of testing that women will do in relationships, that I see like, you know, tweets about this going through timelines, because someone's said something like, you know, there was a woman who said, you know, my boyfriend every day sends me a message saying, you know, that I'm so great and he doesn't deserve to live on this earth. And it just makes me want to cheat. And it's like, yeah, because she doesn't respect you. Because when you draw your boundaries and you draw your lines, you put your firm, your line in the sand, you put your foot down and say, no, this is where I will not accept any further. Then she knows that you're strong and that you're capable and that you're willing to defend something. And so this eternal test, going back to like Gawain being tested in the woods by a witch, you know, this is an eternal aspect of human nature. And it's a lesson that young men need to learn.
Eric, sorry, I missed one. John T.R., I think we should call going out the house to see the missus. Hancocking from now on. sorry, weird phrasing. Yeah, but, I mean, Hancocking.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, not bad. Maybe.
Eric Edward for £50. Thank you very much.
The only real money. Thank you, Eric.
Actual money. Just imagine the simp money if Carl took a day off and Hugo and Callum talked. Also, Merry Christmas, PS, hashtag Team Hugo.
Oh my God.
What's it with the Hugo Sims?
Well, they're loaded, so, you know, okay, yeah, okay, carry on.
Huguenots, so bringing over all the gold. Damn, man.
Do you know who the Huguenots were?
I know vaguely, but you'll have a better
story. Well, just Protestant refugees from France.
Well, it's the thing that everyone uses as an argument for mass immigration as well.
Yeah, they're
left,
they're
like, well, we left the Huguenots in.
They were Protestants, so were we. B, there are only like 100,000 of them.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like we let millions of French people in.
On a yearly basis.
Yeah, on a yearly
basis. For 25 years.
Yes.
Okay.
Since the 16th century.
Yeah. You want to read some?
Yeah, Ducky Like Strain says, I work in insolvency and we are currently low with work. As debt is unenforceable in April, it becomes enforceable again. But when that happens, oh no. Yeah, that, again, all of this stuff, it's all on the back burner. You know, it's like a holding pattern where it's like delay, 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 delay. And all of these other, you know, different lines of things are all being delayed. And it's just going to whack us all next year, man. Like, this just. And the thing is, did the lockdowns work? Did they work? Did they prevent the spread of coronavirus? Did they, you know, so if the only metric by which we've got to measure is like saving the NHS, then okay, yeah, sure. The NHS didn't die.
That was the objective, was to make sure that we didn't go over capacity.
But we were nowhere near capacity.
The first time round, my understanding is we were nowhere near capacity.
We weren't, 64%.
And this time round,
77% in quarter two.
Yeah, but now we're in quarter four now. Yeah, so now, I guess now, we'll find out.
Yeah, but now we're at 88%, which is normal.
So
now we're at normal levels of capacity. John Gray, USA, UK, Australia, Donald Trump, Nigel Farage, Ricardo Boise. Boise. I don't know who that is, but we should look him up. Mr. Phil Crow says, hi guys, just signed up to the website. Thank you very much. Would be interested to hear if you think if there's any practical way, a realistic chance of reforming our system of government. Cheers and keep up the good work. Well, the good thing about the British form of government is that it is incremental. And most of our judges, if Bingham is any judge of this himself, prefer the incremental view rather than the top-down application of proclaimed principles, which is the way that things work on the continent. Hence, you see, like, you know, the constant revolutions of the French to, you know, now on the Fifth Republic, because now we have to get a new declaration of principles that we will enforce on the rest of the world. And ironically, every time they do this, what they're doing is trying to emulate the colonies in the United States, which is the outgrowth of course, English republicanism. And all of this is done from an outgrowth of slow, moderate steps, incrementalism. And so the French have been eternally trying to copy what we have achieved. And I'm not going to keep spoiling, actually, because this is why you should do the premium. There's loads of great stuff in here that I'm going to go into. But basically, the French have been trying to achieve what we have here in Britain. And they've been trying to do it for about 400 years now. And every time they've messed it up because they've approached it in a French way rather than approaching it in a British way. But anyway.
The failures of us being French.
Yeah, kind of.
Silva.
It's just ideological. It's the way they think about things.
Yeah. I realize it's a bad situation, but what's the alternative? Do a Dems in February move where we say party in Chinatown and dismiss it all as a flu?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we're not in control of contagious diseases. That's the thing that we have to understand. We haven't got control over these things.
Isn't your position essentially pretty Patel's, where it was just like personal responsibility? Just don't do anything stupid.
Yeah. If you're sick, quarantine yourself.
Yeah. If you reasonably think you might be infected, don't go to meet people.
Take tests if you're unsure. They should be readily available. Sure, of course. Why not? Mm. You know, but you don't have the right to tell people they can't operate their businesses. You don't have the right to lock people in London and say you're not allowed to leave London now.
I would say it's cruel and unusual.
Yeah, exactly. And it's definitely this kind of thing the Soviet Union did. And if it's the sort of thing the Soviet Union did, maybe we should do the opposite.
Fat J, Labour's website made by a US company. Huh. WidEye.co. No Labour for local companies in the UK.
Well, why would they? They hate this country.
Yeah, don't know why they'd help it. Jake Bartlett?
Bartlett.
Bartlett.
Why are your eyes so bad?
They are what they are. Just announced that all of Ontario is going into max tier lockdown on New Year's Eve. Real classy. Still going to meet up with... still going to meet up for Christmas. Scrum, Canada. Yeah, it's rough. Yep. At least you've got Christmas, I guess.
Yeah.
Red Fox Moon, make China West Taiwan again, I say.
No, oh, I agree. Everyone's we keep hearing from the West Falklands as well. So But we've got to hurry this through because we're actually quite late. Okay, D-Lo, I don't normally quote Jeff Sen Davis, but South will rise again. South/Midwest thrives while the Northeast and West Coast of the USA are dying under lockdowns. Florida Governor DeSantis is based. Not wrong. Thunderstorm, the statisticians had fun making all of those graphs and charts. Happy Yule statisticians. Yes. EZE, am I the only one who thinks China is getting a bit uppity for a country known for being occupied and colonized? Oof. Oof. Well, that's
2021.
That's pretty much what's driving the arrogance from China at the moment.
I mean, if we took Afghanistan, I don't know why we can't use it again.
Bomcha says, fine, we'll lock everything down, but first politicians have to trade houses with a random poor person. Yeah, well, this is the thing. We'll do lockdowns, but we'll furlough everyone who gets paid by the government. Every single person who gets paid by the government now has to work for free for the duration of the lockdown. That's how it'll work. Michael Holder for $100. Thank you very much. I don't know about you all, but the sheer cowardice that people have been showing in regards to the coup infuriates me. Imagine all the historic things that would never have happened if our ancestors were so pathetic as the Karens berating people about their masks at the stores. Yeah, it's hard to imagine we'd defeated the Nazis with an attitude like we've been showing with the coronavirus. Where is our stiff upper lip? Honestly, it's really embarrassing to watch, frankly. I find it very frustrating. But again, I think Priti Patel was right. Just be responsible for your own behavior.
Yep.
Caleb says, Merry Christmas, crew. The show and website are continuing to impress me. Take some of my Santa bucks and carry on. Thank you very much. Mr. Arbiter says, my brother's small wedding has been cancelled over a virus with a 99.7% survival rate. Why are we putting up with this tyranny? We need to show Boris that the public won't put up with this. Well, unfortunately, YouGov have shown us that the public's totally in favour of this. And in fact, Boris is too slow for them. I personally think we need a Runnymede moment with Boris where we, the barons, sit down with the king and say, no, sign this. I really think that as well. And I realise that the papal representatives at the UN or wherever will say, no, that's not valid. And we'll have to go through 50 years of war. But that's fine.
Be worth it.
Yeah. Mighty Ninja says, why must the public suffer to save the NHS? The government has let it bleed out through a decade of austerity. Now they are making us pay the price. Yep.
It's actually a little bit incorrect, though, with the austerity point.
Yeah, but it's not worth getting into right now. Mitamo Ferris says, I live in Kent and I've still never met anyone who's had COVID. I am an essential worker and I've been working nonstop the whole year. Well, apparently there's a new strain around. I guess go get tested. It's really dangerous. You might not even know you have it. Sad Wings Raging says, the best way to achieve the Great Reset is to destroy the middle class by destroying their businesses. Marxists hate the middle class. Prove me wrong. You're not wrong. You can't be proven wrong. And yeah, we're in the middle of the Great Reset right now. I think this is, Klaus Schwab talked about it. You can go watch our weekend podcast about it. It seems to be just out in the open. Griffia says, is it time for a referendum on the lockdown? Yes. Has your gulag got planning permission? I think that is. This is Stalin Hitler levels of scary. Please discuss in New York. And a link. Can you pull that up, John?
It's a commission for a hate crime consultation.
Right, okay, yeah. Just whack it in the Discord or something so I'll read it later. Charlotte says, look at the last 10-year average excess deaths. It paints a different picture as the last 5 years have been very mild flu seasons. I'll look those up. K-Fez says, Carl, I'm American. My wife is from Stanmore. Her family welcomes all of this crap. They're deathly afraid of all things cerveza. I assume you mean COVID or coronavirus there. Maybe the British public are just such sheep. They're like, yeah, well, you know, take away my liberties. I don't have rights. Rights come from the state. And if the gods at the state say, well, sorry, R number too high, get in your house. Don't you dare leave London. Maybe they're for it. Deet says, unable to get the premium on Losi's website. Here's my support until more payment options become available. Keep up the good work. We should have more coming from like a sort of parallel site we'll do with Mines, because they can offer extra payment options and things like that. So maybe options will be coming.
Cryptocurrency as well.
Yeah, crypto and stuff like that. We've got to slowly expand. But if you want to go and sign up, you can help us expand even quicker. We do have a couple more people I'd like to be able to hire, or at least positions I'd like to create to hire people for, because at the moment, everyone's massively overburdened with work, and they're working all hours of the day, even when they're at home. And I would like for John to be able to have an evening where he's not working for once. I'm actually getting concerned about it. So, you know, John one day deserves a lie-in, and that's why you should sign up to lotusseeds.com so John can have a nice
John
lie-in.
Rescue Fund.
Yes, it is the John Rescue Fund. Nightmarish Vision says, what if all these lockdown tiers are designed to make immigrants flee the UK? Oof, 4D chess by Boris. I say Keir Starmer's 4D chess, in fact. Has anyone overlaid the tiers with migrant settlement areas? I haven't. Locomotion Lotion says, what's the difference between London emptying itself at 8 o'clock and it being illegal after 23:59? Now they've had their exodus and it's spread like butter. Yeah, none. It was the same as the ridiculous rules in pubs. So, oh, we're going to have, you can have beer with a substantial meal. Does a Scotch egg count as a substantial meal? I guess if it's served on a plate by table service.
To be honest, I'm guessing it's getting their friends out.
Yeah.
So I bet there's this is a sort of corrupt move where you want to make sure your friends can get out,
yeah,
but
yeah,
the uneducated public who aren't, you yeah know, paying attention 24/7
yeah
don't.
Yeah, I watched Brendan O'Neill on Trigonometry's, oh no, New Culture Forum the other day, and he was saying how there are a bunch of what he called wet pubs, which are pubs that don't serve food, and they're all done, you know. So anyway, Ashley Whitley says, petition.parliament.uk petition, repeal the Coronavirus Act and end all COVID-19 restrictions, 10,000 signatures and rising. Great. We'll find a link to that because I'll promote that later. Totally agree. FA Tuesday says, in the US, once again, we have free states and slave states. Take a wild guess at how that will end. Or take a wild guess at who's running them. Are the Republicans the free states once again? And the Democrats the slave states once again? What a shock. Carl says, thanks, Carl and Callum. Merry Christmas and love the great stuff you're doing. Thank you very much, man. The issue in Victoria is largely down to Daniel Andrews Labour /CCP Fiat. He spent some time in China last year, probably for strategic advice. One stack or two, Andrew? That's the question. Daniel Andrews. Convincing Reality says, all of mainland Scotland is going to tier 4, border with our UK being closed and people only allowed to meet indoors on Christmas Day. Insanity. Yeah, what I love about the Scottish National Party is whatever tyranny that England poses, they say, hang on a second, that's not tyrannical enough. We can go further than this. And so, I mean, I don't know what the penalty for crossing the border into Scotland will be, but it'll probably be medieval. Charles Grady says, good content, love the show, thank you very much. Nicholas Fitzgerald says, will Magna Carta commence again? Doomhan says, my civil liberties are not radical, Callum, and neither are yours. Yeah, Callum.
Did I say they were radical?
Clearly you must have done. Earl of Longford says, we were enslaving and settling you too. Only historically illiterate people think any group of people hasn't tried to fug another. Yeah, there's nobody's innocent. Come on. Stinking Ape says, Merry Xmas, guys. Hard to see how the UK is not finished. Tories are liberals. Labour will be elected next by the dumb populace. Taxes, BLM, IndyRef 2, self-hating media. I'm out. Emigrating 21, RIP UK. Yeah, but where are you going to emigrate to? Like, everywhere's just as bad.
If not worse.
If not worse. So, I mean, and the thing is, right, then you're not going to change it, are you? You know, it's not going to make it less worse. You're going to be reducing the side that would be in resistance to all of this stuff happening. And we should be resisting this stuff happening. This is terrible. But we're right. Zach Redpiller says, how long do you think it'll be before the madness takes hold and people storm Parliament? I'm surprised it hasn't been torched yet. disavow, obviously, and it seems that people love their new coronavirus overlords. Send a cherub for $100. Well, thank you. Man, you guys are incredibly generous. Thank you. But how much for me to be on the show, Sargon? Sennacherib, that is. We don't normally charge you, but you do have to have given us a reason. So you've got to give us a reason, I'm afraid. But I don't mean to sound rude, and thank you so much for the donation. Foul Beast says, I thought the consensus was that people would only accept the limitations on liberties on the understanding that the government would be eager to relinquish that control. They have demonstrated anything but. Well, this is a famous Thomas Sowell quote where it's like, look, you just can't get rid of big government. It never gets any smaller, so don't do it in the first place. The Earl of Longford said, History with Hulbert has a great video on how the Scots Gaelic is just Irish because Northern Irish Gaels settled in southwest Scotland. Gaelic rise up. Scotland is an Irish colonial project in the same way that England is a German colonial project in some ways. So
it's an interesting way of looking at it.
Well, I mean, it's just a fact. It's what happened.
History with Hilbert is also very good.
He is excellent. Louis Epps Jr. says, my mistake, I wasn't aware that was the product. I was under the impression you were creating a kettle and cup set, which I would have purchased. I mean, I'm not saying we won't do that if there's a market for it.
I've seen this branded merch.
Yeah, I hadn't given it any thought. And Sad Wings Raging says, Catholic priest calling out the Great Reset in Wisconsin. Yeah, there have been a couple of based Catholic priests saying, oh, man, this Great Reset looks a bit bad. But anyway... Christ, we have overrun a bit. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And we'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. UK time for more updates on the continual decline of the world. See you tomorrow.